There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Mobile, and this is not Sean Sullivan. This is Cam Marston, and I'm happy to be sitting in for Sean today. Sean is on vacation somewhere at an undisclosed location. We certainly hope to get him back at some point. And he asked me to fill in for him, and I'm happy to do so. And I said, Sean, what do you want this to be about? He said, you pick. And I said, oh, my. And I've got in front of me the first guest of the two that are, or the couple that I'll bring in. And I'm going to tell you about him in a little while. But while the cat's away, the mice are going to play. And we're going to have a conversation that I've always wanted to have. I'm going to get to the core of this guy. There is a group of people in this town, of which I consider myself one and very proud of it, that put themselves through, on a regular basis, the most painful and unhappy suffering that we go through, and we show up every day for it. If you're ever around the end of Spring Hill Avenue, right before it changed to Ziegler Avenue, somewhere between noon and 1 o'clock, you will see a crowd of people, of which I am one, struggling through a parking lot, running up and down the street with pain and anguish on their face. And you think, boy, what have they done wrong? Nothing. We are there voluntarily. And the most amazing thing is that we keep coming back. Rashiki Leatherwood is with me here, and he is the trainer that has changed so much of me, not only physically, but mentally in the way that he pushes. But I'm not here to talk about training. There's so many memes of people who want to talk about their workout and their training. I want to talk about the guy who's created this environment. And before I get him on, I'm going to tell you about this environment. It is a family that has been created over I think I've been there about 3 years, but it's existed long before me. It is the most supportive group of people. And this man has created it. I don't know whether he's done it willingly. I don't know if he knew what he was doing. But it is the most diverse, challenging, friendly, helpful, and supportive group of people, and it has evolved over the years. And the man that leads it, Rashiki Leatherwood, right here next to me, was in the year 2013, he'll give you a little of the background I know, named by Mobile Bay Monthly as one of the most beautiful people in the city of Mobile. And I look at that right now and think, wow, things have changed. But what I want to know is the questions that I've always asked and wanted to get to the answers and just couldn't do it due to other pressures. Now he's in the studio. And I think, folks, in this man is a life message that I am eager to learn. And he's going to lay it out for all of us in this time together. Rashiki, thanks for coming. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here, Cam.
All right, let's begin. You're a native of the city of Mobile. You've been around here your entire life. You've been a lot of different places, but tell me about the beginnings. I want to hear the root. And before I do that, let me interrupt myself already. My wife is reading a book about how people learn, and she was relating one of the chapters to the book of me reading off the back cover, and it is a theory. All right, so here's where we're going with this. The theory that a teacher should give the final exam on the first day of school. And the final exam tells the students what to expect at the end of the year so that the entire year they're built learning what's going to happen. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you the final question, and we're going to build to your answer to this. And the final question of our time together is, what exactly, how do you incorporate all your life experiences into the suffering you inflict on me and my peers every day and keep us coming back? I want to hear chapter one. Tell us about the beginning.
The end or the beginning?
The beginning. Where you started. Give me your background. So we're going to build to the answer.
All right. I grew up in Tomanville, went to LaFleur High School, actually went to Forest Hill Elementary School, very diverse, multicultural school back then. Then moved over to Booker T. Washington Middle School, then to LaFleur. By the time I got to LaFleur, it was LaFleur's preparatory school. So we had some interracial students and things going on. So, but by me having that diverse beginning in elementary school, the foundation, I was accustomed to being around different groups of people. But the neighborhood in which I grew up in, Tomanville, my neighborhood consists of maybe about three streets, General Gauger's, Gibson Street, O'Connor Street. And it had to be about maybe about 25 guys just my age. And we were very competitive.
Yeah.
We always wanted to be the best at whatever, whether it was dancing, trying to get girls, playing our musical instruments, basketball, football, you name it, we were competing every day.
Yeah.
And so the drive to be the best was instilled way back in that old neighborhood. So,
yeah,
we were, and not just around our peers, but guys like a friend of mine, Derek Prince, was maybe about 4 or 5 years older. He was having us in the backyard and have us competing, and all of a sudden we wanted to compete against him. So it was like, not only were I competing with somebody that was my age, I was also shooting higher.
Yeah, so yeah. You were pushing yourself from an early age.
Yes, yes.
And these, obviously, these early influences have stayed with you since to continue to push.
Yes, yes. Not only just pushing, just how we took care of each other.
Yeah.
I hate to use the word I grew up poor, but I say less fortunate. And we had guys in the neighborhood who would cut your hair.
No.
You know, man, I don't have no money. You got to look good. So Clifton Cooper, Jared Davis, they were cutting my hair.
Yeah.
As a point where I didn't have a decent pair of school shoes. So my next door neighbor, Darryl Crenshaw, would sneak out a pair of his shoes just so I wouldn't look bad.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, my whole outlook on life was, if I look back now, it was being shaped just from those acts of kindness, those acts of loyalty.
Yeah.
Back then.
Now, you got a neighborhood of 25 kids that are roughly about the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And you make it sound like everybody's getting along and having a good time playing football or baseball or whatever. There have got to have been some scuffles, some snafus, some things that got you in front of the wrong type of people from time to time.
In my neighborhood, just the core of my neighborhood, I would venture to say that there was really no wrong sort of people. We were just young men that was growing up. Some of us didn't have fathers, so we were learning our way. And so in learning our way, we got a lot of things wrong.
Yeah.
And but there were a lot of scuffles.
Yeah.
I was involved in a lot of them.
Yeah.
Won some more.
Yeah. Never been on the bottom of the pile, huh?
Oh, yeah. Derek Robson, he'll remind you that I bit him. I bit him.
You bit him.
Yeah, he was getting the best of me. I had to figure out a way to get him.
Yeah, yeah. That'll do it.
It got him off me real fast.
Yeah, no kidding. So were there ever any, I grew up in a neighborhood that had, let's say, 6 or 8 people about my age. Mm-hmm. We were getting into trouble. We were doing things that we shouldn't have. Tennis balls and cars, eggs and cars, eggs and houses, all this kind of stuff. Eggs and people on the street, you know? Nothing like that in your background that got you in front of the authorities or anything like that. It's amazing that you can come through an environment like that not get the attention of the blue lights.
Well, we grew up in a different time than what's going on right now.
Yeah.
If the police came, they knew our families.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they took you to your mom. They beat you up, then take you to your mom. You got 2 whoopings for the price of 1.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a different time. Right now, you know, I look in my old neighborhood, most of the people don't know the cops.
Yeah.
So there's not that relationship. That's that void that needs to be bridged. But back then, we had Fox, we had Tyrone Gardner, we had guys that we knew that grew up in the very same neighborhood. So when we were sitting in front of St. Mark's Church on Somerville throwing figs at cars.
Yeah, well, sounds familiar. All right, we're going to go to break here in just a moment. When we come back, I want to hear about Chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 1 was Tomanville. Chapter 2, I know you were in the Army. I know mm-hmm. you went to Iraq, and mm-hmm. I know you had some experiences there, all of which have shaped you into what I experience, what I will experience Friday at noon. And I'm eager to hear that.
All right.
We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And we're back. You're listening to Midday Mobile. Sean is on vacation. My name is Cam Marston. I'm sitting in for Sean. I have with me Rashiki Leatherwood, who is a trainer here in town who has changed the lives of a lot of us, not just through the physical routines he puts us through, but through attitudes and opinions and outlooks. And I'm trying to get to the root of what has shaped this man. Rashiki, before the break, we were talking about growing up, chapter one, if you will, life in Tolmanville, LaFleur High School. I know you spent some time in the Army.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about that.
The time in the Army was probably the most influential time for me because it allowed me to leave my roots here in the South.
Yeah.
And interact with people from all over the world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We had Dominican brothers. We had Chinese Americans. And I hate putting prefixes in front of the Americans, but so goes. It gave me a chance to interact with these different people from different environments, from different ethnicities, economic base, faith base. And we were forced to get along.
Yeah.
And to say, for me to even believe that I call every last one of them either my battle buddy, or just my brother.
Yeah.
And it's a group of us that still talk right now. I've been out of the military since 1995, and we still talk Charles Webb, Cheeks, Andrew O'Connor. We still talk every day.
So you met people. You
yes.
learned to get along with people.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back to the answer that's upcoming at the end of our time together.
Mm-hmm.
I am suffering through that workout that you pushed me through. What part of the Army it comes out in my suffering in that workout? What did you learn? Most people say a discipline, a chain of command. Mm-hmm. What did it teach you?
The Army truly taught me how to look at things 360. Because I grew up a certain way, and then you grew up a certain way, and we have different belief systems. We were raised differently. So I was forced to not just bully you with mine, because my perception or my reality didn't necessarily have to be your reality.
So there's not a right or wrong. Well, there maybe not that's not a right way to say it. There's a different interpretation of
exactly
things. Yeah.
And it all goes back to where you are in your walk in life.
Yeah.
You know, what dispensation of time that you're in your life. There's different times in my life where I was in dark places, so everything I did was dark.
Yeah. So let's go to what happened after that. You were in the Army for how long?
I was in the Army for about 4.5 years.
Almost. Okay. Now, you realize I've asked you a lot of these questions in the parking lot during the workout, and you push me away. You look into your phone. You don't want to talk about it. Now that you're kind of in a confined space, I feel the luxury, almost the gluttony of this attention of yours.
Hmm.
25 years old, I know things changed for you. What happened then?
I lost a child. I lost a daughter back in North Carolina with a young lady that I very much loved at the time, and kind of fell in a real dark place. And at that time, I was doing music with some guys, great group of guys. I was in a group called Triple Effects. I was singing, writing the songs and stuff like that. And when Destiny passed, I kind of like blinked out. I didn't want to be in North Carolina. I lost my reason for staying there.
Yeah.
And so I moved on, went to Atlanta, came to Mobile, and I wanted to build a recording studio. And I had no money.
Yeah.
So what I did was I delved deep into the drug lifestyle.
Did you? Now, this I didn't know. See, this is the luxury of this conversation. This I didn't know. Go, keep going. You have my full attention.
I see.
Yeah.
So I came to Mobile and hooked up with some guys that I knew that were involved in the drug trade, and I jumped feet first into it, and just like anything, like growing up in Tolmanville, I was trying to be the best person I can be in.
Right.
And, you know, like I was saying, I was in a very dark spot. I had people telling me all the time, you know, you don't do that, you don't need to be doing that, and I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
And you don't hear. And it was at that time that looking back, I realized I didn't care that much about myself. I was doing a lot of good things with the money, and I was justifying that for the trade itself. But deep down, I knew I wasn't right, but I had to make a call one night. I got pulled over coming from Grand Bay, And the police wanted to search my car. So I called my mom. And when my mom, when she knew, everything changed.
Yeah.
So it was like, I know I'm messed up.
Yeah.
Because from that point on, I realized I was going to destroy everything that she instilled in me from the beginning.
Well, I know the outcome, at least to this very moment, that you're doing remarkable good things for people that I know and that you know. But mm-hmm. what happened as a result of that stop?
That stop, actually, they pulled a case out of my trunk, and I took the key and disposed of it so they couldn't open the case. Because I know if they opened, it was actually a safe. If they opened that safe, I was going to jail that night. So
yeah.
I took the key and I stuck it inside of a phone booth, the coin slot, so they couldn't open it. So they took it, let me go, called me back the next day and was like, you can come get your safe. Sorry, man. It's your safe now.
That's right. They hoped you'd fall for that, huh?
No.
Yeah, yeah. So you avoided the jail time. You avoided anything like that.
That time.
So yeah. What happened to put you in the jail? I know you spent some time in jail.
Yeah, I spent some time in jail. What happened was I was coming down to do a graduation party. Every year when my little kids, cousins from Grand Bay would graduate, I was DJing also. Had a recording studio in Atlanta. I would come home and throw a big party. So I was coming home and throw a big party, and I pulled out of my Aunt Lucille's driveway, and I was just ambushed by federal agents and sheriff department, and it was like, whoa, it is real.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I ended up going to Eglin Air Force Base to the federal prison camp.
Yeah, and how long were you there?
I was there about 3.5 years.
Wasn't it during this time, if I recall you telling me in the past, that you became somewhat a student of training, physical fitness?
No, that was back in 1991. I was over in Europe.
Yeah.
I actually got into training Kenneth Knight up out of Birmingham, and he took me, he played for the Frankfurt Galaxy.
Yeah.
So he took me to the complex where he played, and I fell in love with it from there. And then I went on and got a little small little job helping, and the love grew from there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you come out of jail after 3 years, 3.5 years, you said.
About 4 total with halfway house. Yeah.
4 years. What happened next?
First thing first, I realized that I wasn't ever going back. When women in jail. There were no women in jail, so there was no need of me going back.
Yeah.
But the fear that's not really fear, I guess I won't say fear, but the uncertainty of what lies ahead. But I knew that whatever lied ahead, I was willing to do to be successful or to make an impact, to even right my wrong.
So you embrace the uncertainty, which is not something many people like to do.
Well, you're either going to embrace it or you're going to let it overtake you.
Yeah.
So
let me reset. You're listening to Midday Mobile. This is Cam Marston. Listen, we got some calls and some texts coming in, and I want to know that we see them, and we're going to address them in just a moment. That number is 343-0106. Call or text the same number. I'm with Rashiki Leatherwood, perhaps one of the most influential people I know. He's not a what you'd call a elected leader. He's an unelected leader. People listen to this man, and he shapes a lot of us. I'm not ashamed to admit. And I'm certainly one of them, and I'm indulging in this conversation. So, Rashiki, it's you embrace the future. Mm-hmm. You don't know exactly where you're going. And I tell you what, buddy, there are people listening right now who are in that same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you steal your nerve to push forward? That is hard to do. Particularly, you had a path behind you that you knew. And though it wasn't all that good, mm-hmm. it was predictable in some way.
Yes.
You left that path behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the recidivism, the people that repeat their mistakes in order to do something predictable.
Mm-hmm.
You had to let that go, and that's not an easy decision for a lot of people to make. How did you do it, and what happened?
Well, that's you asked me earlier, but that's where I know my faith component. I feel like that's where it started, because I made a promise, you know. I made a promise like, Lord, if you get me out of this, I'm going to do whatever it takes. If I have to sell pencils to first graders, I'm not going back. And if I told you I wasn't afforded the opportunity to jump back in, I would be lying. You know, I had a Cuban guy that I knew. He offered me what they call work. And at that point, I needed it. I was broke. I didn't have nothing.
Yeah.
You know, staying with my mom, looking crazy. So, and I was like, nope. I'm going to try this other way because my way didn't work. My way got me here. So let me try this other way. I'm going to stick this thing out. And I got a call from Cedric. He was a guy down the Y who gave me a job, lined me up with a job at Dairy Fresh. And I felt like I was being rewarded for my faith for standing fast in that moment when I could have easily turned around and walked away.
You got a message at mm-hmm. just the right time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You got a call from the above mm-hmm. at just the right time when mm-hmm. you needed it. All right, Rashiki, we're going to go to break. And when All we right. come back from break, we're going to talk about last November, perhaps one of the most tumultuous times that I knew of you. And we'll get through that. I want to learn more about that and the most remarkable act that I've ever seen of a human being, frankly, in my life, within 24 hours of the most tragic thing that could have ever happened. And we'll be back after the break. Thanks, man. Mm-hmm.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile, but this is not Sean Sullivan. Sean is on vacation today, and my name is Cam Marston, and I am sitting in for Sean. I have with me Rashiki Leatherwood, a friend of mine, and I need to be careful now because I will be in his hands again on Friday to go through what we call the boot camp, and I can't. Last thing I'm doing is offend him because it increases the intensity of the boot camp.
True.
November 3rd. Mm-hmm. I'll not forget it. And it didn't even happen to me. Tell me about November 3rd. You're on this upward trajectory. You got a lot of things going for you. You've left prison. You've left a lot of the bad things behind. You've had more bad experiences, frankly, than many of us have. Yet another one was about to strike. Tell me about November 3rd. And I don't want to dwell on it, but I want people to know what happened.
That day changed my entire life, the trajectory that I was on. To say it changed, but it gave it more purpose.
Tell me what happened.
I lost my wife due to a tragic accident, and because of ongoing legal things that I can't really get into a lot of the details, but my wife, my kids were, which is all public record. My wife passed in an accident. Both my kids were rushed to the hospital. My daughter was brain dead, no activity, for roughly about 6 weeks. And you talk about a test of faith.
Well, I know it tested you, and mm-hmm. I'm almost ashamed to say what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. It tested a lot of us,
yeah.
And it didn't happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Within 24 hours of that accident, you were on the news and being interviewed on the, mm-hmm. I don't remember where you were, but I want you to tell people what you said on that news station, and then I'm going to tell you what my reaction was that day.
That day, because of all the things that, let me put it this way, like I've told you before, Cam, all the other things that happened in my life, they were self-inflicted. This was one, the first time I had to face tragedy that I had no hand in. But because of everything that happened in the past, you learn not to be emotional. I would say I've learned not to be emotional. To say that I wasn't emotional, but you don't operate in emotion because I lost the most important person in my life. And the two second most important people in my life were hanging on for their lives. So I knew that there was nothing I could do to change it. So what do? The first thing I have to do is make sure bitterness doesn't grow in my heart. So how do you avoid being bitter? You avoid being bitter by letting go. So what I did was I didn't want to afford myself the opportunity to hate. So they asked me about it, and I quickly forgave the perpetrator of the crime.
on television,
yes,
in front of all the world,
in
you forgave
world.
This yeah. perpetrator of the crime,
yes,
in a way that shook this community, and I don't know if you're aware of that, to the core. And to have had such an experience and to be within, let's say, 24, 36 hours to be able to do that. And I looked at my wife, Rashiki, and I said, that's the most remarkable thing that I think I've ever witnessed. And I said this, I was different yesterday than I am today based mm-hmm. on what this man just did.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I never go back to the guy that I was yesterday mm-hmm. because this is a role model that I need to observe
mm-hmm.
and have make an impact on me. So I'm going to go on here. Within 72 hours, I'm guessing, of the accident happening, in the parking lot of your gym, mm-hmm. a prayer circle formed.
Mm-hmm.
And around that prayer circle was the most diverse group of people, I think, perhaps, that has ever collected in this city. There were people there who come from a very affluent lifestyle. There were people there who don't have two pennies to rub together. Yet they were joined hand in hand in a circle, praying for you and praying for your daughter. And for weeks after that, they staffed your gym. They got there early and they stayed late. And it became, we had all known that something special happens here at this place. We had all known that this is a collection of remarkable people. And suddenly it was on display in front of us. And I was one tiny part of a huge effort, and I'll never forget it. Mm-hmm. What were you thinking as that was going on? What were you thinking as these people were showing up and bringing you food, and there was a line to see you in the hospital for weeks? For weeks.
First, let me say, I want to, my forgiveness was not excusing.
Okay.
I want to say that.
That's a good point.
Because when I say I forgave, the forgiveness was for me, but I wasn't excusing, because out of this, there could be a lot of good. In today's climate, there's a lot of things happening, and a lot of things happen. A lot of people get emotional, but I feel like there's a lot of good that can come out of this. So, but there has to be. You have to think if you have something done and don't have a consequence for it, you pretty much start to create anarchy in a situation. So there has to be a repercussion for the action. Not saying that it has to be some beat down, but there need to be a fence built around it to say, hey, this is not tolerated.
It's unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. And so that was my coming, me saying I forgive this person,
yes,
because of the fact that I was a young person clowning. I was just fortunate enough not to have fell in that situation. But because you did, step up, own up. And that's the first part of healing. But back to what you were saying, I wasn't thinking. I made a declaration that night at Spring Hill Hospital with Lori Bush and Wilder in the room with me. And we prayed for my daughter. And
tell me how your daughter is today.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Brain dead to beautiful.
Beautiful.
What is the doctor's explanation for the recovery she's made?
They've never had an explanation.
It's unbelievable. Whether the prayer circle worked, whether it was a medical miracle, whatever it may be, it was all of the above, I think.
It was. I would tell you, I don't mean to stop you, but let me tell you, for me, it was the body finally doing what it was supposed to do.
Okay, tell me more. What does that mean?
The body of believers, the body of Christ, coming together, doing, instead of talking all the time. Everybody was on one accord, speaking the same thing. And like you say, it was such a diverse mix, to where doctors were telling me that we need to pull the plug. They started thinking about pulling the plug, that it might take 2 years, you might have a vegetable. And I told Tamara Williams, and I was like, my baby all right.
And she was. She was. And you've posted videos of her at the trampoline place and doing all the gymnastics and stuff that she's doing. She's done a remarkable job. It was a truly amazing scenario there. I don't think you had to cook a meal for...
Casseroles.
The white women and their casseroles.
White folk stuff. Casseroles.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what, you got more casseroles. My wife has blown out her ACL. She's had soldier surgeries. I can't get a casserole to save my life. But you had tons of them.
It was a beautiful thing. It restored my faith in humanity.
Yeah. What happened at your gym as a result of that incident?
My gym has always been what it is. It wasn't the first time that gym has come together and supported, showed love, taken care of people in this city. It was just the first time. And actually, it wasn't even the first time that we had to take care of one of our own.
Yeah.
The year before that, we had a young lady that was going through stage 4 cancer, and a young mother got killed. They had 5 kids, and over a weekend, we raised like $5,000 to take care of these people.
We're going to come back after the break here, and those of you that are texting, the next segment is going to be answering your texts, and we're going to talk about his training methods. A lot of people are asking about what to teach kids, and it's a question that I have. I've got 4 of them myself. I'm with Rashiki Leatherwood, perhaps one of the most inspirational people I've ever come across, and I'm grateful to call him a friend. We'll be back after this break.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, you're listening to Midday Mobile. Sean's on vacation today. My name is Cam Marston, sitting in for Sean. I've got Rashiki Leatherwood with me here, and we're going to get to the calls and the texts that have been coming in. The number is 343-0106. That serves as both a call as well as a text line. And we'll go to the text first. This is from, I don't know who it's from. I want to know advice for coaches, managers, and or leaders. How can we create this environment, even though we may not have had his background or tragedies to draw on? How do you create an environment where people want to follow you wherever you lead them?
You have to touch people. My tragedies or my background has nothing to do with why people follow. People follow because I invest in their lives. Everybody that comes to me, they come and they want to fix something on their body. But all of us trainers, coaches, we all created equal. We all know the same things pretty much. But it's how you look at it. Me, I look at it. The reflection you see on the outside is just mirrors what's on the inside. So if you feel ugly on the inside, it's easy to see why things don't line up on the outside. So my goal is to touch you in a place where nobody else thinks to touch you. Let me change the way you look at yourself, the way you believe in yourself. Let me change how you present yourself. Let me teach you how to become accountable for your own actions. And that, we start speaking to that on the inside of you, then all of a sudden it starts to radiate outward.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you do that? I've known you for 3 years. Is this going on without
me being aware
of
it? It's always going on. It's always, because when you walk in and you don't feel good, you notice, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
Because I keep my group small. I know everybody. I know your weaknesses, your strength, your injuries.
Yeah.
In one class, I have 5 different people doing 5 different things.
Yes, I have noticed that. It's got to be tough to manage.
Nah, it's my calling. It's my purpose.
Yeah. Another text here. Give us a message for parents with young, talented athletes or performers, and the best thing a parent can do to support them.
The best thing you can do to support them is allow them to be children first.
Okay.
Don't put so much pressure on a young child to where they stop enjoying the thing that they're doing.
So let them stay in the moment.
Stay in the moment, because they're great at 9, and they might be in a small pond.
Yeah, that's right.
So then as you get older, your child might he might have came out the gate fast.
Yeah.
And then he slowed down. Somebody else comes along. And then you're used to your child being number one. All of a sudden, he was number one just on God-given talent. But talent also has to work.
Yeah. The famous story of Michael Jordan getting cut from the basketball team and no one working harder than him to get back on that basketball
team later on. Best thing you can do is allow your kid to be a kid even at that moment, but make him understand the investment that's being put into him at the same time. It's a balance. It's a balance. It's a hard line to walk today with everybody. Kids are having trainers at 9 years old. Why?
The parents is my suspicion. They think that kid's got an NFL future or something like
at
that.
At 9 years old.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the number of people that have come through. Let's take it to today, our present moment.
Okay, present moment.
The way you lead this, what I call this suffering you inflict on people like me, but we're not going to get to that question yet. That's going to be the final question. There have been a number of people that come through our classes that don't come back, or at least I never see them again. And they, you know, they're wearing the muscle shirts, they're wearing the right pants, they're you know, maybe they think they got something going on. And I try to be welcoming. Here, you need some of these, and you need some of these, and let's set your box up for you, and you're going to need some of these. And then we never see them again. And I would suspect, you know, it's not a great business model, Rashiki, to drive so many people away. What does it take to stick around?
I don't have a sign in front of my building.
That's a good point.
So when you come to Next Level, you understand what you're walking into.
Well, apparently some of them don't, because they don't come back.
Well, I'm not going to change. And it might be bad for business, but I love the environment we've created.
Yeah.
The people that don't come back, guys don't like looking bad in front of women.
Yeah.
And I have some of the toughest women in the Mobile. And I put them up against any guy. A lot of people don't. They want the results, but are unwilling to work for it. I'm refusing to lie to you about what it takes to get there.
Let me go back to the original question I asked you at the top of this show. How do you incorporate all these remarkable life experiences in this outlook you have today into the suffering you inflict on me and my colleagues every single day? There's got to be a story. There's got a way to wrap it up so that the thing I see out of you right now in the studio, as well as I'll see Friday at noon, is a collection of these experiences. Give me the look back real quick. How does it all come together?
It just does, man. I tend to look at life is how I see life. And I want for everybody that walked through Next Level to be the best person they can be. I know what it takes to be the best. Most people come in, they're fearful, they're even unsure as to what their abilities are. After about a week or two, notice I tell everybody, you got 2 weeks. Within those 2 weeks, I've learned enough about you to say, you can be better. You can be better. You can be greater. And so what I do is, my job is to reach in you and pull that out of you and make you see it. And also, when you see me, because some people are like, we never see you work out. Well, you're willing to work out with me if you can keep up.
that competitive element that was a part of the first part of this conversation.
It's always there. It never. I don't want no one from my gym that's trained under me to go anywhere else and somebody say, hey, your trainer got a lot of money from you for nothing. Won't happen.
You hold yourself accountable to that, don't you?
You better believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's next? You've got 1 minute left. What's next out of you? Where's the future taking you?
My future is my present right now. It's to take care of what I've been given. That's these lives. Constantly want to go out and constantly mentor to the kids. And I do a lot of mentoring to the kids. I think that's awareness to teach them about the pitfalls in life, show them what to expect out of life, and that they too can be great, that is not isolated to one race, ethnicity, or anything, that greatness is within all of us. We just have to go out and get it.
I think it's great. I've told you since the first day I met you and began to hear your story, you need a bigger pulpit because your story is remarkable. Rashiki, thank you for your time here. Thank you for the work. And listen, if I've said anything that crossed you today, don't take it out on me Friday. Give me a break.
You got to have it.
We'll be back after the break. You're listening to Midday Mobile. I'm Cam Marston. We'll talk about